When I was in college, there was a book out called Irregular People, I believe it was. And I remember wanting to get that book. I don't know if I ever did, because I wanted to find out how to deal with all these people in my life that were so hurtful, so irregular, that I just needed to kind of do something about them. What I've learned as I've grown older is I'm one of those irregular people. I'm one of the people that I need to figure out what to do with.
Welcome to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of McKenzie Study Center. Our hosts are Dr. Jack Crabtree and Christine Barber. Jack is a teacher at McKenzie Study Center and Gutenberg College in Eugene, Oregon. By training, Jack is a philosopher, but his real passion is the Bible, having studied and taught it for more than 25 years. Christine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, having practiced for over 20 years in California and Oregon. Along with her husband, Larry, she is employed by the Charis Foundation, a teaching and counseling ministry. In this series, titled Christianity at Work in Relationships, Jack and Christine discuss how God teaches us to trust Him through the experiences of everyday life. Here now are Jack and Christine.
Unknown to any of our listening audience, last time you and I met and talked, Jack, we were going to try to discuss the subject of how to deal with hurtful people. We got derailed somewhere along the line, but we didn't talk about that. Instead, I think we talked about some other issues that are very important. We talked about confession. We talked about wisdom. We talked about transparency. And I think those are all really important issues. I found it really helpful. But today, let's try and stay on course, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So dealing with hurtful people. What comes to mind first for me is other people who have hurt me when I think about this subject. I even can think over the summer, and I think about, we've just talked about parenting, and I think about my own children who have hurt me. Ways that they have of being, like their sense of entitlement or their hurtful things that they say to me that is often without even thought. Like, I think they think maybe I don't hurt, maybe like other people. Ever experienced that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think of friendships that have been hurtful. I think about relationships with relatives that have been hurtful to me. And I think it's so easy for me to first think about what they have done. And certainly, as I look at myself over my life and certainly over this summer, the first place I jump is where they're wrong. And that's how I want to deal with hurtful people. I want to look at what they did wrong, and I want to justify myself for the actions that I've had or the attitudes that I have. And I think that I know that that is the wrong way to look at it. When I think about dealing with hurtful people, instead of looking at what they've done or who they are, I think I first need to look at my own participation in the problem, see where perhaps I have gone wrong, what I need to look at, where I need to gain wisdom, and certainly where I need to have compassion for people, not where I have judgment toward other people. I can look truthfully at other people and see perhaps that they are very hurtful, and perhaps I can't even be in relationship with them because of their cruelty or their lack of thoughtfulness or their hurtfulness in some way. And yet, there's always, always a place for understanding that they're like me in some way, that I have a common element of sin in me, though mine might not look like theirs. And that I always have a place to have compassion toward them and to be open to loving them at some, actively being in relationship with them at some point in my life if they become people who are more trustworthy.
So you are suggesting, however, that that at any given time and place, the wise and appropriate action may be to just keep your distance and not expose yourself to the hurt that those people bring into your life.
Yeah, I am suggesting that. I would even say that there's, and I hate to say this, but I think there are people who I have not been kind to, I have not considered being kind to, and that they really shouldn't be around me at that particular point in time. There's a situation that happened this summer where I don't think I should have been around these people. Luckily, they live in another place. But I was so angry at them, so angry at them, that I really felt like I needed to keep my distance because I didn't feel like I was a safe person for them. And I had to work through it. And the way that I worked through it was to look at my huge reaction against these people. Why was it that they did this thing, which I think if you looked at it, you might, on a scale of 1 to 10, make it a 3 to a 5 in degree, and I was making it an 8 or a 9. There's a big difference between a 3 and an 8. And I need to look at the distance between the reality of the situation and my reaction to it and find that there's something I need to learn about myself in my own reaction. And as I do that, then I'm able now to approach these people. In fact, I have spent time with them now this summer. And I found that a lot of the problem was not about them, but a lot of the problem was about me and my reaction to it. I think that is the way we need very often to approach hurtful people. This weekend, I was saying last week that we had gone on a trip down the road, and I was sitting, one of the people that went was a woman that I don't get to see very much, and I was sitting on the edge of her raft while everybody else was getting ready, and we were having quite an intimate talk. It was really great. In fact, we were talking about, it was such a neat conversation, Jack. I think I'll talk about that just for a second. She was telling me how her son was trying to understand evil and how God could possibly be the author of evil or how he could possibly allow evil. And how could we have a God like that that could have evil in any form? And I was sharing what an incredible thing it is to have finally come to understand that I'm just the clay and God is the potter. And I don't get it. I wouldn't have put evil into the world, but I'm not God. And it just shows me how much I don't get it. It's so much like when my children come to me and say, well, how come, Mom? How come? How come? Well, they can't get it, you know, sometimes when I make decisions. But it's because I'm older and I know more and I can't really explain it all to them. In some ways, they're just going to have to put up with me and with life and maybe grow up to be older and see it from a different perspective. And I think that's very much how God is. And it was just a really wonderful conversation, how we were feeling just the awesomeness of God and who He is in this very paradoxical way of seeing evil that both of us hate and both of us see hurting our children and hurting us and hurting our relationships, but nonetheless saying God's good. Anyway, that's all a segue to say we were sitting on this raft, kind of tears coming down our eyes, and just both of us just really connecting on that. And the other people came, the man that was rowing the raft came up to the raft and abruptly pushed it off and said, and I turned and I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm taking off. If you want to stay on, you can. But we're going. And then, whoa. And we both kind of got jolted, and I kind of almost fell back into the water, and I was supposed to be on a different raft, and it was just, nobody had said, okay, guys, let's go. It was just totally out of context. And so what's my first reaction? The jerk. The jerk. Can't he see that he is being totally impolite? This is like unannounced. He could see that both of us were having this great conversation, or he could at least see our faces perhaps, had he even looked. And, you know, I was just had this, what I thought, this righteous indignation at this guy. And I go huffing over to my raft. Can you believe what he just did? Let me tell you. And she and I just kind of looked at us and at each other in disbelief as I got off the raft and was, no, I don't want to go with you. I want to go with my husband. Bye. And it was just so abrupt. And that wasn't a big, huge thing, but it was the kind of thing that happens in life a lot. Yeah?
Sure.
And so I just had to work it through that. You know, so what if he was abrupt? What my responsibility is to perhaps talk to him about that at some point and try and work out how we take off on our rafts at the beginning of the day and maybe have a conversation with him, but maybe not. I don't really know right now. I haven't thought that through. But what I did discipline myself to do, which often I must say I don't immediately, but I was needing to be in relationship with this guy for a few days, and I didn't want it to be bad. I just started thinking about, you know, how it was my responsibility to be kind toward him and how he may not value the same kind of intimacy that I was having with this other woman and even understand that in his life. He may not have seen it. How do I know what was going on in his mind? Maybe to him, he had been very patient. He had been the first and was always the first to get done and packed and ready to go. And maybe he had been very patient and seen himself that way. And I needed to perhaps look from his perspective and see it, not only from my own. And that's a very difficult thing to do, I think. But in looking at hurtful relationships, I need, I think, to look at myself and my own contribution to the problem. And certainly there usually is one in some way. And or look at what is their perspective. Out of what eyes are they seeing this situation? So that I don't just get hooked on my own myopic, egocentric self and not be able to see who they are. And that's a responsibility I have. Who is this other person? Not just seeing it through my eyes.
That last point has been something that's been very helpful to me, is to come to realize we're naturally very egocentric, as you put it. My inclination is to think that everything everybody does is somehow related to me and somehow pertains to me. And a lot of misunderstanding happens because we bring that perspective with us. I mean, imagine sitting outside as a third party and we were able to kind of watch both things happening, watching you have this conversation, watching whatever it was that he was doing. As we saw what he was doing, he was living in a whole different reality from the one you were living in.
Completely.
And he may actually have intended it to be kind of lighthearted. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there. Maybe
that's a possibility.
That just a little scare and just a little practical joke or something like that. So from his perspective, he's just trying to make some kind of contact in his own way. It just so happens that his reality is so out of sync with your reality at that particular time that it's just jarring. And you respond by
jarring, yeah.
You see it as just this incredible intrusion into your reality. But he was totally oblivious to the fact of the intimacy, the profundity, the significance of the conversation you were having. See, if you had been just having a really light chat, it probably wouldn't have seemed nearly as intrusive as it did, given the situation. If he's oblivious to the nature of your experience, he doesn't realize what impact he's having on your experience. Well, our tendency is to assume everybody knows what my experience is right now. I do. Why wouldn't everybody else? I'm so into it, yeah. And so we tend to see an intrusion as not someone in ignorance bumping into my reality, but someone deliberately invading my reality in an inappropriate way. And they had to know what they were doing, and therefore, what a jerk they are for doing it. And I mean, there was something malicious about what they were doing. When oftentimes it was just a kind of clumsiness that really was maybe even ultimately not under their control. It was just a bad timing. And that's helped me tremendously to be able to back off from times like that in my life and realize, well, I shouldn't take it personally. I don't know what they meant. I don't know where they were coming from. I don't know what they were thinking, and I shouldn't presume that I do. So instead of judging them for what they have done, just remain agnostic, Jack. Just assume that they had no idea what impact they were making and let it go. And that's helped me a lot, I think. And you know, it's not just this practical value that I'm trying to tell. I think it's true. I just think it's a true way of looking at reality, that I have to constantly remind myself they're not in my head. They don't know what I'm thinking and what I'm experiencing, and I can't assume that they do.
And here's a third way of looking at hurtful people, or when we think they're being hurtful. They may not see it as hurtful at all, we are always looking through our lenses of the world or our map of the world. That is the perspective through which we see life. So I might think that it is very inappropriate for somebody to do something, and yet from their perspective, through their lenses, it makes all the sense in the world. And we forget that we have different maps. We have different lenses through which we see the world. Lots of times, I think of a neighbor situation I had years ago where the people saw me as being very hurtful. I didn't see that at all. But I think looking back on it, given their perspective of life, I can see how they would see that I had been very hurtful. It is not my way of looking at the world, and it takes a lot of work for me to turn it around and say, oh, I get it. It could be something else going on besides how I see it. And certainly that's how I work with couples a lot in my counseling, and have to help them slow down and pay attention to and understand each other, because we don't understand how profoundly different we are, how different our maps are of the world, the lenses through which we see the world, and we kind of assume that other people are going to see it the way we do, and that gives rise to all sorts of very, very difficult relational problems. So I think we really need to slow down, and if we don't have the opportunity to talk to the other person and understand their context, at least we need to give them the opportunity or give them the space to perhaps have had a different perspective of the world, see things from a completely different way than we do, and not get so bent out of shape because they hurt me. I think that is, the world is so often not about me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what's so hard for us to admit and to come to terms with and to realize, is because it seems so natural to think that the world is all about me. I mean, we're so naturally self-centered in that way. And I think this is part of what you're saying. I may not even ever come to understand how they're looking at the world.
I might
But
not.
I just need to appreciate that it's entirely possible that they understand the world differently. And that, therefore, it's possible that their actions make sense in a whole other context, even if I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just helpful to me to relax and get off their back in recognizing that they may not have meant this to be hurtful to me. That may not have been their direct and intentional purpose.
Or they may have meant it to be hurtful, but it makes a whole lot of sense to them because they thought I was being hurtful
right.
to them.
Right, exactly.
Not that it's ever right that we're hurtful toward each
no,
other, but it
right.
could make sense at least.
Right.
And not just be so totally off the wall, because I think of all sorts of gossiping that I've done in my life about this or that person who did this terrible, awful thing, and how could they possibly do this, and what jerks they are, and boy, doesn't everybody know that people shouldn't act that way. And you know, I think with our best friends, it's okay to spout off a little bit and get a little steam off, but I think we really need to step back and say, okay, but wait a minute. It does make sense, perhaps, that these people are thinking in the way that they are. And then there are people who we can talk to, and I think we need to talk to. I think, in particular, people who we're in close relationship with, our good friends, our spouses, our children. This weekend, again, back to the rogue,
You need to write a book about this.
I have a friend who's a therapist who also went on this trip, and she said that we went on a trip about 2 years ago together, and she said, you know what, for about a year after I went on that trip, I kept on making all sorts of analogies or examples or, you know, I talked about this trip all the time, and we laughed, and we said, yeah, close your eyes and hang on. I think I probably could write a book. But one of the things that sometimes happens when we go down, always happens when we do this, is my husband gets a little bit uptight, because he in this trip and in several trips has been responsible for the food, for the equipment, for, you know, just kind of the lives of all these people, basically. And there's a lot on the line, and so he gets a little bit grumpy. So that I had talked to him about that and said, you know, it's really important that you don't get grumpy at me because I'm already pretty scared about going on this trip and I really need to start it out really well, so just be really, really nice to me. So we're loading up the rafts and he was grumpy at me on, you know, three or four different occasions. And, you know, I was scared anyway of doing this. So, of course, I made him the villain. I didn't think, why is he doing this? What's, you know, not that it's okay that he gets grumpy, but what's the context here, Christine? What's going on? Maybe it's not about you. Wow, what a big thought, you know. Maybe it's about, you know, this whole big thing that he's trying to pull together. And I really put him on a standard that was really inappropriate. So you know what I did for the first day? I was a total jerk. I thought, he's going to hurt me, man. I'm going to hurt him back. In fact, you want to hear a bad story? I don't know if I should tell this. I'll tell it on the radio. One of the conditions on which I will go down the river is I get my own private bathroom. Now, they have these outhouses, and they're unusable as far as I'm concerned. They cannot be used. It's not possible. So we bring this porta-potty for me, my own private use. So we've always kind of stuck it in the tent or out in the tules or something. Well, unbeknownst to me, my husband had a seamstress make this whole teepee thing that you put the oars together, you hook them at the top, and then he had this whole cloth teepee thing that had a zipper and and like these little places where you put the toilet paper. And it was really pretty cool. So he's setting it up, and I am up on the camp just kind of fuming still. And I look down and I see him doing this thinking, what in the world is that? What's he doing? He just bought another dumb piece of equipment. We spent too much money already. Why is he doing that? So I come down and he's all proud of me. He says, look, Christine, look at this. And he showed it to me and I just went, ah, I can't believe you did that. And now everybody knows that I have a bathroom all to myself, and they're going to want to use it. Oh, gosh. And I stomped away. I'm terrible. It was awful. But it was me unwilling to look at him even trying to care about me, putting him up to a standard earlier that morning that was completely impossible. So what did I have to do that night? I just had to eat crow, total crow. You know, I was wrong. Actually, I didn't do it till the next morning. I was that bad. I was so terrible. But I just had to, through the night, I kind of stayed awake and had to look at the hurtfulness of my behavior, look at possibly there was some other reason why he was upset. In fact, he had tried to tell me what was going on, and I had been unwilling to listen because I was so sure it was about me. And just kind of got lost in that whole thing. And so instead of me looking at how do I deal with Larry, the hurtful person, I had to turn it around and look at how do I look at Christine, the hurtful person. And I hate to admit this stuff, but I can be a real jerk. And I can see why people could relate to me in ways that are not so great, because I don't relate to them in great ways sometimes. And I make the mistakes, and very often I don't see them ahead of time. I kind of don't get it. You know, I didn't get it that whole day. It just I just felt justified in what I was doing, as crazy as that sounds. But being in the midst of it, I don't get it till later. And I think many times it's not about the mistakes we make. Maybe this is a justification, but how we deal with them. And I had to go back and deal with it in a way that was very humbling. It ultimately brought more closeness between my husband and I, but it was a hard thing to say, I was really wrong. Mm-hmm. And not just holding him to how wrong he had been.
Right. Well, it doesn't sound crazy at all. I mean, that's the experience of all of us. Our natural tendency is to feel justified because they have hurt us first. We rationalize, we defend ourselves, we punish the people for having hurt us, we hurt them back. I mean, all of that just makes a ton of sense in terms of our experience. It doesn't make any sense at all morally or biblically. It's completely wrong, but it just comes so natural to us. Mm-hmm. That's how we relate to one another.
So you recognize that in yourself?
Oh, Jack. Absolutely, yeah.
So can you tell on yourself? I don't want to be left out here on this island.
Well, the way I punish is by withdrawing, kind of pouting, becoming even more quiet and silent than I am naturally, than I am otherwise. I punish my wife by, if she's going to be that way, then I'm just going to be invisible to her. And won't be available, won't pay any attention. And it's terrible. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing to do. And all of our strategies are counterproductive. I mean, they never help the relationship. The only way, I mean, you get into a vicious cycle where I'm hurting her, so she feels justified in hurting me back, and which makes me feel all the more justified in continuing my hurtful behavior. And you're never going to get out of that spiral downward until one of you stops and says, "This is wrong. What am I doing?" I mean, just as you did that morning, somebody needs to put an end to it. And it takes that courage, that humility, that wisdom, that responsibility to own my part of it. Mm-hmm. Without demanding that the other person own their part of it. I'm just going to own my part of it and put an end to this.
And that's really it, Jack, because by the time we've gone in this vicious cycle where we've used strategies to protect ourselves really from what we don't want to see in ourselves, I don't want to see the pain that I inflicted or the hurtfulness that I, the hurtful way that I am or whatever, or the pain of looking at myself really, then I use a strategy to protect myself from somebody else being able to get in there. And I make you the wrong person. It's, if I can do it by withdrawing, I can do it by very direct means. I can do it by being very compliant. There's lots of ways. I think yours is more kind of passive-aggressive withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever means we do it, yours looks a little bit nicer because it's so quiet. Mine looks a lot more aggressive because I just look so outwardly mean. But they're both on par with one another.
Right, they are. I feel more justified in my strategy because I can always defend it as, hey, I'm not doing nothing.
I'm not doing nothing. I'm just thinking over here. Yeah. So it actually may be harder for you to finally say, you know, confess it before God and say, you know, I acknowledge this is wrong. My yelling, I have a really tough time saying that's okay. Mm. I mean, when I'm a real outward jerk, it's out there. I have a really hard time saying that's righteous indignation. <You know? laughs> That's a tough one for me to to go with. So whatever strategy I use, I need to own my own part of it, even though you probably, by that time, have done a lot wrong also.
Right.
And that's what my reaction is to go back to Larry that morning and say, but you did da-da-da-da-da-da. I wanted to say all that he had done wrong, and that would have created another cycle probably, unless he had been in the same courageous, humble place.
Right.
Which usually the next day he's more so and I'm more so, but it's right for me to say where I'm wrong and probably not appropriate for me to have to indict him. I think we need to learn to indict ourselves and to leave the other person to indict themselves if that's what they want to do. And what I mean, indict, I mean accept the real responsibility for what I've done, not to put myself underground and say, oh man, am I the worst human being in the world, but oh yeah, there is my humanness and it is sinful.
Right.
So, and that's a tough thing to do. It's especially tough when the other person may come back in a very hurtful way toward me in some way, like, yeah, you were really wrong. You were really bad, and you're worse than me. To keep stomaching that is, I think, the depth of courage.
Right.
To keep coming back to that and coming back to that. I think of people I work with where one particular couple where one of the spouses is just incredibly, incredibly courageous, and this spouse realizes that they may never have a courageous spouse, that the other person may never admit to their wrong, may never see. They may live in a very lonely relationship their whole life and yet is very committed to wanting to keep looking at their strategies of protection, to keep not blaming the other person, to keep trying to love them in spite of not getting back what they desperately yearn for. It is an act of courage because very often they're just grieving what they have lost and yet staying soft and open and safe for the other person. And if anybody would ever come around, it's in that context,
mm-hmm.
to come around to loving you because you have been safe. For this person, I wonder if their spouse will ever come around, regardless of the amount of safety that is being offered. I can just take my hat off to them, and I'm so glad to have them as people that I get to work with because I get to see that courage. And when I lack courage, in fact, the other morning on the beach when I was camping at the Rogue, I thought about this person, and I thought, this person would have courage. This person would say the truth. And very thankful for that.
Hmm. That's great.
You know, Jack, there's other people. We're talking about needing to take responsibility for my part in hurtful relationships. Or when somebody is hurtful to me, what can I do about it? What we've said is I need to look at myself, and we've talked about that in several different ways. But what if somebody is hurtful and wants to continue to be hurtful and is just working toward being cruel toward me? What do I do in that kind of situation? I think many of the same things, and I need to not trust somebody who is not trustworthy. I need to not put myself in the path of somebody who is only out to hurt me.
Which becomes particularly tough in a marriage relationship where I have made a promise to not protect myself in quite the same way. What happens when that's a marriage then?
I mean, Jack, why do you have to start with a hard question? Because what I was thinking
well,
of when
can,
I said
we can
that,
save that.
Well, what I was thinking of when I said that was I was thinking of a situation with somebody that I know that doesn't even live in the same state.
Right, yeah.
And I think I'll go there because it's easier first. And that's have a willingness to, again, be open to reconciliation at some point if they're willing to be kind, but pretty much not have them be a part of my life, regardless of who they are. They could be a very close relative. They could be a past friend. They could be somebody that I've worked with in the past. But there's people who may be really counterproductive for me to be in relationship with them. There's nothing noble about me being beat up by another person just because they're hurting bad enough that they want to beat up anybody that's around them.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think we need to appreciate that I think I've learned by experience over the years is that somebody's that their weaknesses, their failings, the as you call them, their strategies, the strategy for their getting by in life, may be hurtful to me and not hurtful to someone else because it's about me, and that's part of what you were talking about. I need to use this as an opportunity to learn something about myself and grow myself. What I mean is, let's say that you have somebody who, for one reason or another, is very competitive mm-hmm. and just has to win. The impact it may have on you is you just kind of note it, you observe it, you recognize that weakness in them, is that, boy, aren't they competitive. But it's really not that big a deal to you because it's just not that big a deal to you. You don't need to compete back. You don't need to win. If, on the other hand, I have a real struggle with my self-image, if I have a struggle with my self-acceptance, I'm just really not sure that I'm a significant human being. I really haven't solved that for myself. I haven't resolved that. Being in relationship to this person is constantly reminding me, if they keep beating me in this competition that only they know about, the message that keeps sending to me is, you're nothing, you're worthless, you're a loser, you're whatever, and I experience that as an incredibly harmful, hurtful kind of relationship then. Well, ultimately, I think, as I am finally sanctified and then surely as I am finally glorified in the kingdom of God, that same person would not be hurtful to me in the same way. Because I would have come to terms with where the source of my significance lies, you know, where my identity lies. My core would be built and would be solid, and I would know who I am. And I could be oblivious to that other person's competition. But that's not where I'm at right now. So I think what you're saying is, until I can resolve what I need to resolve to be able to interact with that person in a way that their behavior is not hurtful to me, then I may need to buy myself some time and keep my distance and just not be in that relationship.
That's what I'm saying, but that's what I was saying in part A of our conversation. I think that fits into me looking at myself and learning from what's going on. Like when I was talking about they're doing a 3 and I'm reacting at an 8, mm-hmm. Wait a minute. It's about, there's something that I'm reacting to that's about me, and I think that's a great example of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my own, in this example, lack of self-worth, I will experience somebody always being in competition and perhaps winning as somebody that's very hurtful to me, or maybe even trying to be hurtful toward me, when the reality is they may not be hurtful to X, Y, and Z person over here at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have some learning I need to do.
Right.
Okay, so that's still in that group of people that I was talking about previously. What I'm talking about now is a person that is approaches life in a cruel way. They go about trying to hurt people without recognition and without care that they're doing it. In fact, they may be like a bull in a china shop, not just to one person, but if you got 10 people standing up there, they're probably hurtful to all 10.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may not be hurtful to all 10 because it's not in their best interest. They may be really great to their boss because they want to keep their job, but they're really horrible to the other people around them that they're not invested in being seen in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of person who is just maliciously cruel that we need to say, uh-uh, I just cannot be around that kind of person. I'd like to think that that's only the Hitlers of the world. I'd like to think that there's only a few of those around, but that's not true. There are a lot of people who are not thinking about the best interests of other people and really are looking to hurt others. Those are people that we need to identify and maybe be kind to, but not trust in our hearts.
Okay, so maybe you said those are the ones we don't want to be around. Maybe you could help me with be around. You ultimately mean just trust, right? You don't mean that I can't be in the same office, but I'm going to relate to them differently because I'm not going to trust them in the same way that I might trust the rest of my office mates or...
I mean both. With some people, it's just best not to be around them. If there was a Saddam Hussein around, I just would like to be in a different country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are some people who... it's just not good to be around them. I could be in a job where they're there, and because they're so hurtful in this second way, not that I just need to look
right.
at it. And I think I always need to look first at my
right.
at who I am and what's going on with me. But I may not be able to be in that work environment because that person is so hurtful.
So you may need to quit and go get another job.
I may need to do that. I mean, there are people like that, and it's just a very destructive type situation, and so you don't continue to be in it. Or maybe they have some particular vendetta against me or someone else, and they're going to hurt them. I mean, if I had been to my husband the way that I was that one afternoon, over time, over years, I don't think he should be around me because I was out to hurt him, and I was going to do that. I was blindly going to hurt him back. And I don't know, I guess you'd have to exaggerate what I did quite a bit for that to be true, but ultimately, I would be a bad person to be around if I was just intent on hurting another person. There's also a situation where I can see how the other person is hurtful. I might be around them, but I may not trust them.
Okay.
And I think both situations, going back to your original question, can happen in a marriage. I can be in a situation where they are so hurtful, they are just so blindly enraged perhaps, they're so unaware of their hurtfulness. They're so maybe out to hurt another person, and I might be it, that I cannot stay in that marriage relationship. It may be that and what I would recommend to somebody is to separate for a period of time and to try and get a distance and try to look at the situation and try to work with it. Certainly as a measure toward trying to reunite the couple. But ultimately, Jack, if a person is just out to hurt another one, there is nothing noble about being put in your grave or put in a mental institution or completely unable to function because the other person is so entirely hurtful to me, or to lose yourself so completely. That's not good. That's not a marriage. That's no commitment on the other person's part toward loving them, whether the paper says it or not. So that's a situation at its extreme where people should not, I think, remain together in a marriage. In other situations where the person, where one of the spouses is perhaps trying sometimes, but completely unaware of their own impact on the other person, they're not trying to be malicious, but they are indeed very hurtful. In fact, this couple that I was talking about, where one of them is just so courageous and the other one is quite hurtful, but just is not able to see it, I think that the person who's courageous needs to not trust that the other person is going to act in their best interest, to try and look accurately at who they are and respond to them with wisdom. There's nothing good about being naive there. So if the person says, I'm going to give you on a $200 food allowance for the month, and so they know that that 200 from history that $200 is going to become 100, well, then they better not trust that they're going to get the 200. They better stay within the $100 grocery money and live that way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So just, be wise enough to know what the words of the other person mean, what the commitments of the other person are worth, and so on, and take all that into account as I interact with them. So what you're talking about, just so that I'm clear, is when someone has come to an accurate objective, and let me underline objective, appraisal of the trustworthiness of another person and found that they just are not trustworthy, then in the extreme, if they are extremely dangerous, you're saying I need to completely put some distance between me and them if I can. And in any case, if they are not trustworthy but not altogether dangerous, I need to recognize that I can only trust them to the extent that they're trustworthy and not be naive about that. That's what you're saying.
Right.
The trick, of course, is, it goes back to the first thing you said, is I really need to be able to recognize when I have made an objective appraisal and not a subjective appraisal. That is, is their hurtfulness really about them setting out to hurt, or to what extent am I lenses interpreting as hurt what is not really intended as hurtful by them from their perspective through their lenses?
Mm-hmm.
And I really have to be wise and discerning and sorting that out. And that's where other people can help me. I may be too close to it, too close to my own lenses to be able to see. That's where I really need to let other people lend me their lenses and tell me what's going on.
Absolutely. And I think that I always need to be open to seeing better. And I think I think a sign that shows me that I'm willing to continue to look and maybe see my part or look at my lenses is, am I willing to be reconciled to this person if the opportunity came? If I have a hard heart and I'm unwilling to ever be reconciled, I think that's a good sign that I'm really not open at all to the things that I need to be open to and looking at. And with some people, I can say in my life, I think of one particular person that I don't think there will ever be a reconciliation. I don't ever see that they will be a person that will be anything but cruel toward me in my life. But that is very painful to me. I want the reconciliation. I want to be able to make it work. I want a soft heart toward this person, and I think over the years have gained one through the very things that we've talked about here. And I think an additional one is, as I, Jack, have seen my own sinfulness just displayed in front of me by unwillingness to the willingness to look at it over and over again, I just can't make myself worse than that person. I mean, I can't make that person worse than me. They're hurtful, and they're trying to be hurtful, but gosh, I have a really hurtful heart, and thank God that He has saved me in the sense that He's helping me to see that my heart is hurtful, helping me to want it to be less so, helping me to try and love people the best I can, but I'm not a very good lover.
In the time that's left, Christine, why don't you, maybe you could summarize, put in a couple of, or three simple points what we've been talking about.
Okay. I think, first of all, Jack, had I been listening to this program, I wouldn't have expected us to say some of the things that we did. Very often in thinking about hurtful people, we put our attention on to the hurtful people and what we should do about them. And we've kind of turned it on its head and said, no, let's look in the other direction. Let's look at ourselves. And I think that's the very core of what we're trying to get at today. So what do we mean by let's look at ourselves? Very often when someone's hurtful, what we need to decide is, perhaps they didn't mean to hurt me at all. Perhaps they came from a perspective that made a lot of sense to them, but I just can't see. So I need to decide not just to be egocentric, but to try and decide that maybe they have a perspective that I don't have. Another thing I need to do is look at the lenses through which they may see life. They are different than me. They may see a way of serving somebody as something that I would see as a hurtful behavior. We're such different people that we need to really understand I'm different. I may not ever know how you're perceiving something, but at least I can come from the perspective that you're different than me, and maybe you saw it from a different perspective that could make sense if I knew it. And in fact, Jack, very often in counseling, I'll see two people from the same business or the same family or at different times, and they'll tell me about the same story from completely different perspectives, and I think, oh, if only I could bring you together.
Yeah,
this makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
But I can't do that very often because of confidentiality, and it just kind of, I can see both their perspectives, but gosh, if they could only see each other's, it would just kind of fit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we really need to look for what is the other person's lenses. Another thing, if I am reacting big to somebody, I need to look at, well, maybe this is about my issue. You used a really good example of competition. Maybe because of who I am, I'm responding to this person, and other people may not. So I can look at my own issues and grow and look and mature from having the opportunity of looking at my response to the situation. We said in addition that sometimes there's people who are so hurtful that we must stay away from them because they will only destroy us. And there's other people who are hurtful, and we just have to assess the situation, see where they're trustworthy and see where they're not, and live in wisdom with them.
And then the only proviso is that we not hastily jump to the conclusion that somebody is not trustworthy. We need to make sure that's an objective appraisal and not just a reflection of my own lenses.
And keep looking at it and looking at it and looking at it. Because I don't know, Jack, how objective we can ever completely be.
Yeah.
Practically speaking, there is nothing more practical than the truth of the gospel. However, many times we wish the Bible to be more obviously applicable to our everyday struggles. We want our pastors and Bible teachers to show us how Christianity offers clear solutions to our problems. In the News and Views article, Practically Speaking, Mackenzie Study Center teacher Ron Julian argues that the teaching of the Bible is not about techniques for a happy life. Rather, the Bible continually calls us to re-examine the profound story of what God is doing in creation. A story which has many implications for our view of God, ourselves, and the world. On the surface, this may seem very theoretical and not very practical. However, the gospel is profoundly practical and life-changing. But by its very nature, it is a set of ideas. We need to be reminded of those ideas over and over again. Thus, the most practical thing a person can do is to base their choices and decisions on the foundation of truth presented to us in the Bible. Contact Mackenzie and ask for your copy of Practically Speaking by Ron Julian.
One of the series that has been really valuable to people, we've gotten a lot of requests for, is the singleness series. In fact, Jack, some of the people who have ordered the singleness tapes have said, wow, this is just as good for marriage. And in fact, sometimes when people want to hear about marriage, I'll give them the singleness tapes, even before our marriage tapes, because they, I think they really did hit at some core issues. People who have been really helped by our ministry have sometimes sent in donations, and we certainly appreciate that. We covet your consideration of supporting this program so that we can continue to broadcast it. We have the last couple of weeks tried to read some of the letters that people have sent who have been appreciative of the program, who are supporting it, and who just have expressed their interest. So here's just a short letter. Please let Christine and Jack know what a blessing their program is to so many of us in Northern California. Christianity at Work is truly a unique ministry. As others have expressed before, Jack and Christine address so many issues that so many of God's children are afraid or ashamed to discuss. Please know I will continue to pray for your broadcast ministry. One thing she says here is that Christianity at Work is truly a unique ministry. And what we tried to do when we started this ministry was to not make it like everything else, but to try and, through our discussion format and through the discussion of issues in our own lives, and through a thorough look at the scriptures, that we can offer something that is unique and especially helpful to people in a world where there's few answers and a lot of questions. And once again, to continue this broadcast ministry that we are thoroughly delighted to be doing and thoroughly grateful, and I think for both of us, humbled for the opportunity. We do ask you guys to consider thinking about if you want to contribute financially, and do it today. Think about it today and consider sending in a contribution.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program, or would like to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. Tapes can be purchased with check or Visa. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The Mackenzie staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the Mackenzie staff in their ministry through their classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The Mackenzie Study Center is a nonprofit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to Mackenzie, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to request a free taped copy of today's program, The telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now, on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of McKenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.